This is Chick Flick Fix. I'm Julia Scott.
And I'm AJ Knox.
We watch chick flicks and rom-coms and decide if they need fixing. Can we make them better or can we make them weird? This week we're talking about Twilight from 2008, directed by Catherine Hardwicke. And written by Melissa Rosenberg, based on the novel by Stephanie Meyer. It stars Kristen Stewart, Robert Pattinson, and some CGI glitter. Pattinson actually wrote some music that wound up on the soundtrack. One of his co-stars, like, snuck the music to the production team. So it's in, I think, one of his songs is in the ballet studio scene and somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So, like, two of his songs, like, he sings on the soundtrack, which I actually think is really cool because it doesn't...
The other one is in the diner when they're in Port Angeles.
Okay. Oh, my gosh.
Because it doesn't feel to me like... You know, like, Steven Seagal wrote the soundtrack. It's more like, you know.
This is the new version of Patrick Swayze in Dirty Dancing.
Right.
She's like the wind. Swayze.
Yes.
Yeah. In 2015, Lionsgate released an extended edition, which is just over 4 minutes longer, which edits in some scenes that were on DVDs as deleted scenes, which I'm like, if they mattered.
Right. All right.
Anyway.
That's fine.
So.
People want to see things that they haven't seen before.
Like and vampires. That voice. That voice belongs to our guest. We have a very special expert witness. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. I'm Laura Crowe. A big fan of the Twilight franchise, and it is not a secret. I'm in my 30s.
And. Laura and I, Julia and I went to high school and did theater together, and Laura and I went to college and did theater together.
My condolences.
Yeah.
I got AJ at a very special time, as I'm sure you did too.
We'll put in some deleted scenes from this podcast for the Patreon. We probably won't. So your relationship to these movies, we've yes. established that you're a big fan. Did you read the books first?
That's a great question. And my journey is unique in that I saw the very first movie, Twilight, first. Then I read every book.
Wait, so you saw this movie and it inspired you to read the books?
It did.
No!
I could actually see that, though, because the movie doesn't necessarily make sense. And a lot of people say that if you haven't read the books, kind of like with... some of the Harry Potter movies, it's like, wait, what is this?
Definitely with Harry Potter, things happen so fast. Exactly. Yeah, I watched the movie. It was a very interesting time in my life, 2008. And this movie just really came into my life at the very moment that it needed to. And I just went home and, you know, immediately bought the book and plowed through the book. I mean, we're talking stayed up till like 4 a.m. You know, his hand was on her face and I'd put my hand on my face. It was such a bad book, but I could not stop reading it. And that's just that's just how it goes with Twilight. It's so bad and you can't stop.
Yeah, I have only read the first book. I think I've seen part of the second movie, maybe the whole movie.
Mm.
But I read the first book and I was like, this is so bad. Because my thing is
bad.
Like,
it's bad.
Being a girl child of the 80s, I have read a lot of like supernatural romance, supernatural urban romance, supernatural YA, you know, my fair share of bloodsuckers and gore eaters. So I've read much better stuff than this that can still
yes.
be fairly badly written, but
yes.
this is just painful.
It's so true. It's very
weird. And then
weird.
The movie somehow manages to feel like a badly written book. Spoiler alert. I felt kind of bad. I didn't get a chance to see this yesterday, so I watched it today. I was talking to my husband who's working from home, and I was like, I really want to nap, but I have to watch Twilight. Actually, nap might be the best way to actually experience Twilight.
Just absorb it through sleep.
Osmosis yeah. viewing.
Yeah. But like, it's funny because parts of it, of the story and the movie, I could be like, I totally see how this would just like hit a certain part of your brain just right. Either
yes.
at a certain age or like you were saying, at a certain sort of phase of your life.
Uh-huh.
And then other parts, I'm like, how could the movie make it through this part?
Right.
And like, but yeah, okay.
I always think, how could it have made it past the editing room? How could people have moved on from that scene? How could have we said, that's a wrap on that scene? You know, like, I could fix it instantly.
Well, then
put me on set.
I'm glad you're here.
Wait about 40 minutes.
Yeah.
All right. AJ, what is this movie about?
You're impossibly fast and strong. You gotta give me some answers.
I'd rather hear your theories.
I have considered radioactive spiders and kryptonite.
It's all superhero stuff, right? What if I'm not the hero? What if I'm the bad guy?
I know what you are. Your skin is pale white and ice cold. You don't go out into the sunlight.
Say it out loud. Say it.
Vampire.
Are you afraid?
No. This isn't real. This kind of stuff just doesn't exist.
Does in my world.
Oh boy. So this is your classic YA romance between a mortal young lady and an immortal young vampire. Or I guess he's really old. I don't know. He's like 70, something like that. 170. They never really.
He was 17 in 1918.
Okay.
So he's like 100 and something.
All right.
So and also,
he's like.
And right at this moment, I was like, influenza, too soon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I didn't even think of that. I don't know why. It's her constant daily struggle.
Oh, yeah.
So we're introduced to Bella. She's telling us in voiceover as we watch a deer in the woods. She's telling us about how she feels about her death. And so the movie really kind of sets us up. It's like, oh, she's for sure going to die at the end of this. And you see a deer running through the woods as being chased by something. And then a human kind of jumps out from behind the trees and tackles it. And then we cut to Phoenix, Arizona. She's holding a cactus.
Yeah, to represent Arizona.
Yeah, this is Arizona.
She's bringing
clever. It's so clever.
And then her mom is like, yo, I'm going on this road trip with this douchey guy. And you're moving to Forks, Washington. And also, this movie features as its like most prominent cities, Forks, Phoenix, and Jacksonville. And I'm like, it's a whistle-stop tour of America's armpits. Apologies to any of our listeners
Port
there.
Port Angeles.
And Port Angeles. And I will talk about Port Angeles and Forks here in a minute because I have a very close relationship with both of those cities. So she moves to Forks she immediately meets Jacob, who she used to make mud pies with as a kid. And her dad's the head of the police, and he gets her a bright red rusty truck.
It's orange.
Is it orange? All right.
Like a burnt orange, like a pumpkin spice latte.
It's pumpkin
orange.
Spice latte. Oh, this connects it. This is, oh, it's in the Love Guaranteed cinematic universe. All right. So she moves to Forks. And she's going around the high school. She meets everyone there. And they tell her about this family, the Cullens, who are very reclusive and weird. And I could not tell, based off this movie, if the Cullens are the most popular kids because everybody won't stop talking about them. Or if they're, like, the least popular outcasts because everyone won't stop talking about them. I could not figure it out if, like, do people love this family? Do they hate this family? What is going on? And I guess that's kind of how you're supposed to feel about vampires.
But I also feel like, because we're introduced to them when Bella goes, who's that or who are they?
Yeah.
And it's like, would you randomly just say that about someone walking outside the window, even if it's a small school? But I guess
they have their aura.
They have glamour. Like
je ne sais quoi.
Okay.
And yeah. And I also think that both Bella and Edward are misunderstood popular loners. That's how I've categorized them both, based on exactly what you said.
Misunderstood popular loners. All right. I actually really like that.
It's not very deep, but neither is the book.
Well, I think Bella is, you know, she is the sort of perfect avatar in any YA aimed at girls. Because, you know, she's a little clumsy. She's very much doesn't know how beautiful she is. And is like, oh, no, I'm not very cool. But, like, she gets friends super quickly. multiple people want to ask her to prom.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that in the book, if I recall correctly, based on my viewing of Alex Reed's Twilight, the web series of this guy just reading Twilight and kind of dunking on it, apparently it continually talks about Bella's appearance but never actually describes it. And then when it finally does describe what she looks like, it says she looks like her mother, who they also have not described.
Classic.
So she is like classically nondescript.
Well, this is the key. This is one of the key hooks to Twilight for...
Because she's literally the perfect avatar to insert yourself into.
Exactly. She is so unspecific that any girl can literally insert themselves into her being and make her better, almost. So that could be me, and I'd be even better, and Edward would love me even more.
Oh, no.
or some thought like that. I don't know.
Oh, God. Well, here, we'll talk about characters, because I have thoughts on everybody. But, all right, so she meets the Cullens through school, and then she goes into science class. She stands in front of a fan and blows her smells over to Edward Cullen, who literally looks like he just smelled a fart in my favorite scene in the whole movie. Spoiler alert.
And
in some parts, looks like that music video, Jizz in My Pants.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, yes.
He's having some feelings.
He's having a lot of feelings.
He's never smelled anything like that before.
He's having an immortal boner.
And so he has to take a few days off from school from smelling Bella because her blood smells so good. And then he comes back. They get partnered up in science class. She starts to get to know him. He saves her from an out of control van in the parking lot. And she's like, oh my God, he's a superhero. And for whatever reason, even though she's not hurt at all, she goes to the hospital and everyone calls 911, even though she's totally fine.
She might have whiplash. We don't know.
Oh, God. This overprotective students.
I mean, if you saw that happen, your first assumption probably wouldn't be that someone was fine.
Right. But then if I saw her and I was like, oh, you're alive and conscious and not bleeding and totally
not even a scratch.
And there's a huge dent in this van. Anyway, so she goes to the hospital, meets Edward's dad, who's also a vampire and a doctor, which is surprising because you're like, vampires are doctors. Wouldn't you just want to drink all the blood in the hospital? Anyway.
Very interesting. And
maybe he gets access. It's like nurses who steal drugs from the supply cabinet.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so the next like friggin' hour of this movie is just Edward having no chill and just being like really intense and really mood swingy and her doting on him, and then finally she's like, something's up with you, your eyes are changing color, you stopped that van with your hand, you're weird, you're pale, you disappear when the sun's out, I don't know what you are. Everything about him just like screams vampire all the time. Like even all the other students go, oh yeah, when it's sunny none of the Cullens come to school. They go like...
Because they're hiking. Camping, they're camping.
Hiking. And I'm like...
Soaking up that vitamin D.
They are all pale. They are all beautiful. And they don't come out in the sun. They're vampires. This is Anne Rice. Anyway, so he's like for sure a vampire.
Maybe they all just have that disease where the sun makes your skin blister.
Oh, yeah. The powder disease?
I forget what it's called. I'll put it in the show notes. But also they... can't go in the sun, so they're pale, and they're beautiful because something, something.
Yeah.
They kind of play it up, though, that vampires are folklore, so they aren't believing that it could be a possibility, right? Like, if you saw a vampire, your first, you know, thought might be denial, or this person's a little goth.
They do go to La Push, and Jacob tells her about the pale faces and
the cold ones.
The cold ones, mm-hmm. Which were like the Cullen's ancestors, and how there's a rivalry between Jacob's Rez and...
It just hit me now that Cullen sounds like a Brit pronouncing cold ones.
Exactly. Come on. Yeah.
The cold ones.
The Cullens.
You have to think about the fact that we have not consumed this media as many times.
Yeah.
Well, then it worked, right? It's very subtle and clever, actually.
Oh, Laura, I just cannot wait to dunk on this movie in a minute and have you like come to its defense, because I'm actually very curious, because we've never actually talked about Twilight.
That's much. True. It's smart that we don't,
yeah,
probably.
So during this time, she's like getting stories from other people. She's hanging out. She's going surfing. And they go to Port Angeles to go to prom, or to go prom dress shopping. And Edward saves her from some hooligans. You know, so finally she goes out. She's like, something's weird. They go to dinner and he's like, I can read everybody's mind, except I can't read yours. And she goes, what's wrong with me? I'm like, this cuckoo across the table just told you he's a psychic and you're asking what's wrong with you. Like, oh, so.
And he's not eating. He's just watching her eat.
He doesn't eat anything. I'm on a special diet.
I wish that scene could have been more specific, because like when he's talking about reading people's mind, he's like, that one's thinking of money, sex, cats. I'm like, that is. I mean, even probably you could make accurate guesses like 70% of the time in a restaurant. Like, I want the jokey mind reading movie where he's like, that guy is thinking about that he needs to change the oil in his 1992 Honda Civic.
Yeah, be like really, really specific and bizarre. Because, yeah. And so, yeah, I also, if I could make one script doctor, I would say I'm on a liquid diet instead of a special diet.
Then this would take place in Santa Monica.
He's an intermittent faster.
Yeah, okay, exactly. Wait. He's ahead of his time. He's so ahead of his time.
On the Love Guaranteed episode, we did kind of dunk on intermittent fasting.
We dunked on an intermittent faster.
Right, and the movie did. And I did talk to a friend of mine who told me the intermittent fasting community is up in arms about Love Guaranteed. So,
oh, no.
If we offended any intermittent fasters, I'm sorry. We were just admiring the film's humor. That is my PSA. Moving on.
Can't say anything anymore.
I know. So finally she confronts Edward in the forest. She takes a guy who's like super weird and creepy out into the middle of the woods where nobody can see her to have a confrontation about, are you lying about who you are? He shows her.
And they cross like an empty schoolyard where they could have had the same conversation.
Yes, they go.
It's very true.
Yeah, they could have had this private conversation anywhere, but they go into the woods and then he's like, all right, I'm going to show you. And he walks into the sunlight. Does he spider monkey her at this point and then go into the sunlight?
No, sunlight first.
So he goes in the sunlight and he's all sparkly and he's like, this is
why. But it's important to show that he doesn't just sparkle on his head. He also has to open his shirt.
Yes, of course.
Love it. Love it.
So that we all know that it's not just a really good highlighter.
Right. It's not just glam. So yeah, he sparkles in the sun and that's why vampires can't go out in the sun, because everyone would know who they are and they have special powers. So then he tells her he's a killer, and then we get like 15 minutes of friggin' vampire exposition where she's just asking him about vampires and he's just answering her about vampires. I'm like, this is a lot of tell, don't show.
It's the Twilight world of vampirism. Right. Which is has very different rules than other vampire folklore. So they gotta have an explanation.
What is like one of the weirdest vampire rules in this movie, in these books, in this world?
Like what vampires do?
Or like what's just like a very weird rule for them that is like, that's weird, besides the sparkling.
Oh, yeah. I think it's that you bite them and that there's venom in their teeth.
Oh, the venom. That's right.
That, there's venom in their teeth.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a thing normally. And I remember watching True Blood and thinking like, this is wrong. Like, I was defending the Twilight
vampires
version.
Vampires are supposed to have venom.
Why are they like incubating underground to change them? What? I don't even know. I better turn on Twilight again because I understand that.
I mean, there are animals who have venom in their fangs, but usually with vampires, it's either just some sort of weird like soul connection, or you have to drip the vampire's blood into your mouth. You have to take some in.
Oh, wow.
Or they have some sort of enzyme in their saliva, which can also help heal wounds, which is why like they can have sort of pet humans and just like feed off them a little at a time, but they're not completely full of sores. I think in Anne Rice's universe, they need human blood to be able to transport oxygen around their bodies because their blood is too like cold and still. So like they start to sort of suffocate if they don't take in human blood.
Oh,
I will. I did a research study on vampires for grad school. I don't even remember why, but I did like on Vampire Lit. Fun fact: Dracula is like the only male vampire in the late 1800s, like emergence of vampire literature.
It's all like Carmilla and stuff.
Yeah, it's all women, and the whole idea of vampires was like they would taint your blood, and it was usually these women who were kind of sexy who would like poison you and make you sickly. And it was actually like anxiety around immigrant women and like refugees from a lot of times from like Eastern Europe who would often have like syphilis or other, you know, venereal diseases, and who would get into like sex work occasionally as, you mm-hmm. know, part of being, you know, in their status. But one of the whole anxieties around vampires originally is this idea of like a foreign woman making men sick.
Mm.
And after that, you have like the vampires went from when they got into the male, because first it's basically like a succubus story.
Yeah.
She will, you know, take your soul, make you sickly, whatever. And you have these very classic ideas of the different ways to kill them, like stake through the heart, mm-hmm. or stake
garlic,
stake them into their coffin,
mm-hmm.
or you have to cut off their head. My favorite like evolution of lore is that it's not crosses specifically that they're afraid of. It's the thing that you believe in. So like you can hold up a copy, like a picture of the flying spaghetti monster if you truly believe in that, because it's your faith that is offending.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, when she holds up a cross at the end, he says, what is this? Your puny little faith? Ooh. And she says, my keen fashion sense. Invite me back for Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
But after that,
the movie,
when they start, that is a very good movie. But when you start getting into more of the male vampires, you have this also, and I'll definitely get into that in like 2 minutes. But just the idea of a sexuality that is threatening and safe at the same time,
mm-hmm.
because they can A, control your mind, B, are much stronger, all these things. So you have this sort of passion and ravishing, but you maintain your sort of claim to innocence. Anyway, keep going, AJ.
Okay. So Edward tells her she's a vampire. He takes her to meet his family, and they cook her dinner, and they've never cooked.
I love it.
They've never cooked before in their life. And I'm like, that was also an opportunity for a much funnier scene of like,
it was pretty funny for the movie.
Yeah. For this movie. Absolutely.
And also funny when she's like, you know, I ate before I came because I thought you guys like, it's one of those cute, like both people trying to be nice and it makes everything awkward scenes.
Yeah.
I would watch a movie just based on that kitchen scene though, AJ, you're right. There's a lot of potential there. Yeah. I mean, Emmett's waving the knife.
It seems to me like something like out of What We Do in the Shadows, right? Like vampires trying to host a dinner party for humans.
I think that's where they got their inspiration.
Yeah, probably. And so they tell her that they're good vampires. They only eat animals. And they say they're vegetarians. That was my favorite part. It's like, we're vegetarians.
That's their joke.
We only eat animals.
We're basically vegetarians.
I guess that was supposed to be a joke.
It's cutesy.
And where I was like, I know you guys were alive once, because when they talk about like it's kind of like a human living on tofu. It'll fill you up, but it'll never satisfy you. And I'm like, dude, you guys need to learn to cook.
Yeah. Which,
they obviously haven't done in 100 years, but like.
So they spider monkey around the forest, and you find out there's like another cabal of vampires who are evil. They go out and they play baseball in a thunderstorm. He comes in like, it says he likes watching her sleep. And I was like, ew, no. What else? Oh, we also keep getting reintroduced to her mom as she just keeps calling her from random locations at like, when her husband's doing things in the background. And I'm like, oh, her mom also gave up her life for a man. So this is where it's like a pattern.
Oh. I get
it. And also it's like, why are you not even using this for a tiny bit more exposition so we don't have to stick quite as much of it in other things?
Right. And so so then the other evil vampire clan who has, during the course of the movie, been like actually killing people and eating them. And everyone's like, oh, it's an animal attack. There's a lot of wild animals in Forks, apparently.
Tis the forest.
And
they're known as the Nomads, these three vampires, okay. Which I've always been like, can I get a sexier name?
All right. Yeah. So the Nomads.
They're the rogues.
Yeah.
The Nomads, go and they say they're going to kidnap her mom or something. This is where, like, I totally lost the thread of the plot. And they end up in a ballet studio fighting?
In Arizona.
Yeah. Basically, when they're playing baseball, James, one of the nomads, sees that Bella is with them. And so against against vampire rules in the Twilight world,
right.
You can't have actual mortal friends or people involved. You can only hang out with other vampires. And so that's what sets him off. They play up this weird thing that he's a tracker, obsessed with the hunt.
Yeah.
And now he's going to track Bella. It's become like a game, because what else are you going to do if you're frozen in time, living forever? You make up games to play, like hunt this girl to the ends of the Phoenix, Arizona ballet studios.
Mm-hmm. And then so they have a big fight that one of the vampires gets killed. Right?
James does.
James
does. The hunter.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. he gets killed. Bella gets really badly wounded.
Yes.
And Edward has to save her. And he starts mm-hmm. to suck her blood. And then his dad shows up. And he's like, stop. She's fine. You're killing her.
No, he's sucking at the venom because
exactly.
James bit her.
Right, right.
He has to stop in time.
Right. Weird venom.
Yeah,
well,
he's sucking out the venom,
snake move.
But then
which keeps sucking, doesn't work.
The dad says
exactly.
the venom is gone.
Yeah, like how does he know that? That's a really funny part. He's like,
I think he can.
Her blood
smell
is clean.
It.
Oh yes, oh, okay. Julia. Yes,
and so,
there's a lot of smells in this story.
There's a lot of smells, and they reference it.
Yeah, and so she goes back. She gets better. She goes to prom with Edward. Literally walk in, she says a really awkward hello to one of her friends. She's like, hi.
And she shows her friend Anna Kendrick, hey, your tits look great in that top.
Oh, yeah, that's what she does. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, they do.
Yeah.
Right.
And then,
science.
So then they go out and they dance under the gazebo, and then it cuts inside, and we see Veronica Mars. No, what's her name? Veronica Burgess. Vicky Lake is inside the building. This is also like the fanciest small town prom I've ever seen. Like that gazebo yeah. is a work of art, and I'm like,
oh, totally.
There's no way.
There's like two people dancing in there. They yeah. conveniently leave when Edward and Bella come. It's also an introduction to Jacob again at the end is important when he talks to Bella. But when Edward's parking the car, because Bella has this broken leg, and Jacob's there again.
Yes.
So like a reintroduction of Jacob 2.0.
Because he's going to be the love interest in the next book.
They really are playing up the
New Moon.
I Leave You Alone and the Wolves Descend. I didn't know what that meant the first time I watched this movie. I was like, what?
Oh, well, you didn't
you
get that he was a
werewolf?
I hadn't read the books. I didn't know. I was like, this is a vampire story.
Yeah, but he legit, when he's talking to her, is like, some say that my tribe is descended from wolves. She's like, actual wolves? He goes, it's a story.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, whatever, back to the vampires, Jacob.
Oh, man. So, yeah, and so that's classic ends at prom. And then we see the villain who's going to be the villain in the next one.
And you get to be continued in revenge, ..
Yeah, basically. And then it is like 50 Shades exactly. of Grey during the credit sequence. That credit sequence gets real horny, and it's like...
I love it! I'm so excited to watch the credits for Twilight, and when are we going to talk about the fact that how did they get Tom York to agree to have the song in the credits for Twilight?
I think because this was, you know, the biggest book of like that whole decade, and following along that, the biggest movies or expected to be the biggest movies, I would bet that like Tom York has a niece. Because that's usually the case.
I like that.
That is so
awesome. Or Tom York loves money.
Yes.
But this movie was really done on, I think, a smaller budget. These stars were not stars yet. And they didn't know. You can tell the budget increases from Twilight to New Moon, the second one. Like they didn't know. It was kind of like a risque, here we go, we're going to try it. It's probably going to be fine. But this really kind of catapulted all of these massive...
And both Pattinson and Kristen Stewart are like, if I could take it back, if I could undo it, I would.
They're also welcome because they're also going to be rich for the rest of their lives.
That too. I know. Robert Pattinson sent an article that was like, he said Edward was the hardest role of his entire career because how do you keep doing a role for 5 movies and keep it from being boring? I'm like, you kind of were. You kind of failed at that.
I didn't think he kept it boring. I thought he did a really good job.
I think that's not his fault. Anyway, so we've already kind of established that like the trope in this movie is like vampires, love triangle. Like it's all of the classic.
Yes.
Sort of.
It's prom.
Self insert, beautiful, clumsy girl.
Yes.
But what I think is interesting, because I started talking about like vampires being a story of a safe kind of threatening sexuality. Mm-hmm. And I may ruffle some feathers here even more than the intermittent fasters, but it makes so much sense that Stephenie Meyer is deeply Mormon.
100%.
Because this whole story is just like, you know, he wants her more than anything. He almost can't control himself, but he does. And also, they can't ever actually be physically together. There's no actual threat uh-huh. there because he has to control himself. And she gets to be in, like, it sort of, it keeps rotating. She gets to be the aggressor, but the story lets us know that she can, you know, beg and want all she wants. She can't have it. So you have both this safe aggression and sexuality from his end, but also she gets to be the sexual aggressor and nothing can ever come of it. They hold hands. That's all they can do. And it just feels like the most boring way to explore sexuality with vampires.
We definitely got to do all these movies now because the movies versus the books are very interesting. And you're totally right. There's the whole lion and the lamb thing that they even mention briefly. There's a lot of teasing, you know, a lot of frustration, but a lot of, I love you and I'm all in. And there wasn't really a transitional sentence.
Well, I love after he tells her that he's a vampire and that she smells really good. And he's afraid he's always going to want to drink her blood. She wakes up the next morning and there's a voiceover. She goes, three things I knew for sure. Yeah. One, Edward was a vampire. It's like, yeah, he said that. Two.
Yeah, you already knew that.
There's a part of him that thirsts for my blood. It's like, yes, he just told us this. We don't need to recap. It just happened. And then three, I'm madly, uncontrollably in love with him.
Unequivocally. Don't forget the million-dollar word that no girl would ever use.
And it's like, but why? And I mean, I know the but why. It's that they're 16, 17. But yeah, no, and it's that's where you get like the super destructive parts where he's like, I'm going to hurt you.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, you're not. I trust you. And it's like,
that's weird.
How? Because you have this idea that I also think is incredibly problematic. Like a lot of romantic movies and chick flicks, you know, they're based around the idea of two people being right for each other, but not all of them are based around there is only one person and it is completely predestined. There is no escaping it. And like, she is not just special because she's the main character. She's special because like she smells like, you know, pumpkin spice to every vampire. And he can't read her mind. And also like all this lore that they are all, you know, imprinted and bonded on each other, which is very much like, well, he might do bad stuff. And he's telling you that he's probably going to do bad stuff. But love.
Yeah, there's definitely the I'm a killer. And she's like, I don't care. The next line, literally. I kind of guffawed last night. I was like, oh, yeah, that's really bad when you're trying to analyze a movie. That's a bad line. That's a bad scene.
Yes.
All right, so we're getting into now the main couple. Like, I have to say, I actually, well, like, when I was talking about going up and down in my feelings about this movie, there were really parts of it where I was like, this is really sweet. I can see how you would relate to and, like, insert yourself in the story. And then other parts, they're so stupid. And that often has to be the case, both in chick flicks and in, like, YA and Supernatural, but it's like, You have to make some sort of effort to make me cheer these people on. Mm-hmm. Like, there are lots of different ways to do it, but where you're just like, some parts of it, it's very much like, oh, honey. And other parts, you're just like, why?
There's not really some, like, a tender moment of sparkle, or that's the wrong word to use for this, but there's not a tender moment of a spark where you're really pulling for them. It's a lot of, I'm bad for you. I don't care. Here you are. Yeah. I can't read your mind. How convenient for me. And you're a super babe.
And I feel like it's the ultimate, you know, tell, don't show. That it's just like, I love him. And that is right. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
Do we care about them getting together?
For sure.
How do we feel about Edward? Like, I feel like there's not much you can say about these characters because they are never really fleshed in. They are only something.
Pun intended.
They are only ever driving this clunky narrative forward. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know anything about Bella except that she knows that Debussy wrote Clair de Lune, which good for her, right. I guess.
Yeah. And that's like where does that ever, like, oh, Clair de Lune. I love.
Well, it's to show that she's deep. It ties her back into her ballet. It's very silly. Exactly.
About Edward, we know that he had the flu. And so, like, I don't feel like I have anything to say about them. Please prove me wrong, but, like.
I mean, Edward definitely has the whole vampire having the superpowers thing that only some of them have, some of them don't, or like the extra powers. So Edward being able to read people's mind, that must be so lonely, a crowd of sea of voices and noises, and he can't hear Bella. It's like the opposite, you know, of she's this tractor beam of smell and a void of thought. So that makes her attractive.
I feel like it's a bad old Hollywood joke about the perfect wife being a mute or something, where it's like, oh, he actually only likes her because, like, they can hang out and he gets quiet for, like, the only time
ever. It's like he can make her up to be cooler, too, because he can't read her mind. So he's assuming the best.
Yeah. And she has a lot of inner dialogue in the book, right?
Yeah.
Which just completely disappears here. You get a couple of voiceovers. Mm-hmm.
That's fine.
One of my favorite bits from the book, again, is when they're introducing Forks High School, and I think she's talking about inner monologuing about Forks High, and she said, nothing about the building would have told you it was a school except for the sign out front that said Forks High. It's like, that's the thing that would tell you it's a school.
That's like a Jack Handy quote or something.
It's like so, oh God.
It is. I mean, it's very a certain era of online writing.
Yeah.
I kind of just want to skip past all our regular talking points because this movie, like, how do we feel about the villains? They're murderous, chompy vampires.
Well, they could also be, I have time, sunlight, the town of Forks, Anna Kendrick. There are a lot of villains going on.
Wait, Anna Kendrick is not the villain.
She's a little hater in this movie. I mean, she's funny, but
she's just super insecure. She never does anything actually bad. The closest you get is like some sort of pointed barbs that are very much about, you know, making sure that this new girl doesn't actually beat her in this tiny little group hierarchy. Yeah. But that quickly passes. She's like a red herring.
That's true.
From Stephenie Meyer. Like, oh, this girl's going to be bitchy, but then they're nice, you know? Do you have any favorite characters, Laura?
Yes, for sure. Hands down, it's
probably more likely.
It's Charlie, the dad. He's always been my favorite.
Me too. He's so good.
He's such a good actor. Like, the trivia that I know on him is that he gave himself the mustache, like, for the audition, and that they kept it for the cop stash, you know, his little references to vitamin R, and he's like, bring Edward in. He's got the gun. His comedic timing and his subtlety is perfect. And he's the best actor in it. And my favorite part for sure.
So you agree, AJ?
I would totally agree. I love that actor. He's really fun.
Billy Burke.
Yeah. And like, I think he's in this in like a different movie. Do you know what I mean? Like he's kind of trying to play like a little bit
he's
of like
he's in Twin Peaks.
Yes, yeah. Yes. That's awesome. You know what? That's actually what it is. Like there's definitely a Twin Peaks influence here, and he's just playing like kind of befuddled, weird enough, and like confused dad who's trying to figure out his teenage daughter. Like I think,
but at the same time, you're like, so is he in this movie? Is he supposed to know about the lore and the like the conflict between the vampires and the wolves? Because there's a lot of between a lot of people, there's a lot of pointed looks in this movie,
right?
Because I could see it being sort of like, because that's also a common theme in a lot of stories where, like, you know, a couple of people in the Muggle world know about the magical world. So like, if you're the sheriff, you need to know, or maybe you don't. But like, I just feel like. So is it that the indigenous people on the res have told him something else about the Cullens, or does he know that they're bad guys but good guys? You know what I mean? Like, he's – and that's another of the sort of Twin Peaks where he's just like, you just have to accept that, like, all right, we live in a small town in Alaska and Bigfoot is every now and then going to come in and pick up some mac and cheese. And you're like, all right, we all know that. That's fine, you know?
Yeah, I think maybe he symbolizes the rest of the town and the community for what are they knowing and what are you jumping to the conclusion of? You're not going to think werewolves and vampires. You're going to think they're a little different, but they're fine. And seems like the Cullens have it dialed in that they move around a lot based on their age and when people start to suspect that they're getting a little too old. So, you know, it kind of fits in with how the town might see them too. And he definitely has an ignorance is bliss mentality, which I think is translatable to how everyone must feel about the Cullens and the werewolves. But you're right. Like, it's interesting that he's very close with Jacob's dad. So What is that? An enemies closer sort of scenario for the werewolves?
I have a feeling that's going to come into play in the later movies.
It's definitely a through line. And it's very charming how they kind of pull it off with him.
Yeah. I like the friend group because they are also in a different movie.
Yeah. They are for sure in like Breakfast Club. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of like that. So, I mean, it says something that we're like, none of the main characters, thank you, please.
I also like the teacher. Exactly. The teacher with like the weird kind of Bronx accent. Like
the compost teacher?
Yes.
And he has a golden onion where you're just like, I know that teacher.
Yes. Exactly. That's very specific.
Yeah.
Do you have a least favorite character?
Yes. Alice.
Which one is she?
She's the flippy-haired clairvoyant.
She can see the future. So I watched this movie really thinking about my dislike for that character and the actress as well. And I thought, okay, it got better at the end, but they – I don't know
why. Like at the end of the series?
Like the end of the movie, the end of this movie. It always feels the same for me for all the movies. But for some reason, Stephenie Meyer paints Alice in this way that she's this – best friend of Bella. And it happens in the second movie and book, they really play up their friendship. But once again, kind of like Edward and Bella, it's based on nothing. So I'm always like, why are they such good friends? Nothing ever happened. There was never like a homey moment.
I think it's because Alice has already proclaimed it to going to be so.
Absolutely. She's like, I know that we're going to be friends forever.
And in the first half of the movie, she feels very sort of manic pixie dream friend. Mm-hmm. She's just like extremely wide-eyed and a little squeaky. Mm-hmm. And then like later, it's like, you know, she's got new direction from somebody.
Yeah.
Where she's like actually a little more.
Right, right.
Because that's another thing I think about vampires where I'm like, are there vampire psychologists? Because all of these people have to have a lot of PTSD for a lot of different reasons.
Yes.
Both for what happened around their death and then things they've seen and had to do. And even just like having to move, not being able to get relationships. And you're like, Alice has some stuff she needs help with. Yeah. And I'm not saying that as a mean thing. Like, I was at my shrink today, you know? It's just, yeah. Everybody in this movie needs a hug.
Yeah.
That's true.
And I think, too, that, like, with Alice becoming her best friend, with, like, Edward, the whole idea of, like, all these people latching onto Bella and Bella kind of sacrificing her personality and her being to, like, be friends and be close with these vampires. At first, I was like, man, this is a very dangerous lesson about, like, you have to, like, have a new friend group. You have to kind of, like, sacrifice yourself. And then I was like, oh, no, it doesn't really matter because she doesn't have a personality before this. So she just kind of, like, morphs into these personalities.
Right. She's not sacrificing anything.
Right.
It also occurred to me now that you can even, you know, you can sort of read the vampires as Mormon as well. Like, you have give up parts of the outside world. And also, they're all in white and super clean and stuff.
And they're all really pale.
And you have to give up parts of the outside world. You have to join this community and you're going to, you know, have to kind of commit to and
defend it.
Yeah, and submit to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, AJ, you were talking about your favorite part.
Well, I have a few favorite parts, like, for various reasons. One of my favorite parts is when they go to Port Angeles to go dress shopping because it is so fully not Port Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, just for... So, really quickly...
Port Angeles sounds like such a made-up place name.
Doesn't it?
It's not.
No, it's not. So, my family, I have family up there, and we go up there every summer. Forks is 45 minutes away from where we stay. Port Angeles is 30 minutes away. Port Angeles is the big city. It's where you go like grocery shopping. It has a couple grocery stores and a Walmart and a cute little downtown, like two blocks of like little shops, but it's a port town, right? And it's in logging and industrial, and mm-hmm. it is very much a small town. But Forks is a drive-through town. Forks mm-hmm. is literally like at a fork in the road, and it's not. There's not much there. And Laura, I know you and Jesse went there last time you came up there to visit us.
So we visited AJ this summer at the cabin that he's referring to. And it was my first time going to Forks. We made a day trip out of it. I was both so excited and so like whatever, because none of it was filmed there. So if you're going by, you have to get into the book mentality to be in Forks, Washington. I already knew all the filming locations, and it's actually closer to where I actually went to high school, near Kelso, Washington. It was all filmed in Portland mm-hmm. and Kalama High School, which is a high school 10 miles from my high school. So I've actually been to the high school dozens of times to bring people, show people, take mock, you stopped the van photos in front of the high school. I've been in the high school, talked to a weird teacher who just wanted to show me all of her photos from the filming. Like it's amazing. So none of it was filmed in Forks. The only thing that was actually taken literally from the town of Forks was the Welcome to Forks sign. They recreated that to a T for the filming of the movie, but not even that was filmed in Forks. It's probably too far for them to get to, and you know.
They did film at La Push, I do believe.
No, that's the Oregon coast.
Is it?
And then they start to film in Vancouver. Oh. Yeah, so they film near Cannon Beach. The Forks, the town, is a very drive-through town, but they play up the book. So you really have to be on par with the book and suspend your disbelief. And there's a hospital and there's a police car. I took pictures in front of everything. It was still very fun to be there. But it's a nothing little, I don't want to say nothing. It's a drive-by logging town that would be very interesting
like
to
Twin Peaks.
To yeah. live there. It would be very interesting
yeah,
to live
and
there.
And Port Angeles also, like when the Twilight movies and the books came out, like every store was Twilight. There's a store that would be that opened that was just a Twilight memorabilia store.
Yeah, I went
and,
there.
Like people come, like tourists come just to visit these cities, Laura being one of them.
Totally.
What's your favorite part, Laura?
I have a lot, of course, and they were mostly little moments. I'm a sucker for a montage, and throughout the Twilight movies, they have a montage at some point.
I knew I liked you.
And the montage at the end where it's like Edward singing, and
oh my God.
And they're playing through kind of their torrid love affair for this whole movie. That's definitely my favorite part. But one of my favorite lines and deliveries is when Edward has Bella in his room for the first time, and he says, yeah, this is my room. And he says it in this perfect, awkward teenager slash, like, do you approve of me? There's a lot of little moments like that that are really good. But I also like the moment that you referred to earlier, Julia, where they walk into the forest after she's kind of figured things out behind the high school. My friends and I endearingly call that scene this is the scene where he knows that she knows that he knows that she knows that he knows that she knows scene, because they're looking at each other like they're going to fight, and then they go up into the woods and everything changes. So I also like that scene.
And that is followed by, because I don't know if I have specifically a favorite part, but I hate all of the CGI vampire stuff. Like
right.
him,
like
him,
the fast motion stuff, and like,
yeah, where he's just like, you know, crawling like a raccoon up a tree or something,
right?
And it's just like, you just look silly, just do it like with shady figures through the trees, because I cannot find this like cool or hot. And like, that's because like so many parts of this movie feel like cheap cable channel movie.
Oh, yeah.
And if that's what it was. Cause so many of the sort of the CGI is weird. Everything is so blue that I was like, can I just change my TV settings just for this?
It's
so
blue.
You haven't seen Jacob turn into a wolf yet. That is like the epitome of awkward CG.
It gets better.
But it's just, you know, like so many parts of it are so cheesy. And then there's this incredibly like ambitious camera work and movement and spinning and like, you know, pull zoom, like it's so weird.
Yeah, they get the helicopter for that tree scene.
Yeah, and it's just so that like the cheesy CGI and the cheesy like jumping, running, rolling together with the other stuff, you're just like, for what this is, I can't quite accept this. Like if this was, you know, Mother May I Sleep with Vampire, I would be like, all right, yes, I'm here for it. But yeah, it's just, it's too blue.
It's very blue. And then it gets very warm at the end.
Yeah. Oh, God. My least favorite parts are just all of the vampire running. I do like the baseball scene, though.
I do, too. The baseball scene is very fun.
You kind of can't deny that scene.
Yeah, it's fun.
I love the conceit of we have to wait until there's a thunderstorm. And then there's not too much effects there. It's just like, it's just sped up.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the weird draggy effect. And it's just like, it's like regular.
It has that weird song over it.
Yeah. Super massive black hole.
So I like the baseball scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys have a least favorite part?
I mean, the movie.
Oh, no.
No, I just will say my actual very specific least favorite part is when he saves her from the van. They go to the hospital. And then she's like telling him like, You stopped it. I watched it happen. He goes, no, I don't know what you're talking about. And it's like really classic gaslighting. And it's like really aggressive. I was like, woo.
It's like no deny. There's no denying an improv, Edward.
Yeah.
Which is still like just narratively an understandable gaslighting. Because it's not just that he's like, it's like he is like, I have to save my family. And I don't know how, because this usually doesn't happen.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I like Laura, what was your least favorite?
So I have two, and they're quick. You know, like most scenes in here are quick. One is there's a scene of Bella putting ketchup on her veggie burger, and she's so not putting ketchup on her veggie burger. Like, you have to go back and watch the scene. It's like, mime like you're putting ketchup on your burger, but hold a ketchup bottle. It's like not a thing. I'm doing, you know, ridiculous hand gestures.
Yeah, for our listeners at home, Laura is making some very vulgar hand gestures.
No. And then at the end, I really hate it when she's in the hospital bed with her oxygen mask.
Yes.
And Edward's there talking to her. And when he's like, I'm going to, you know, you better go live with your mom in Jacksonville. And she's like, no, I couldn't possibly. No, I'm so uncomfortable watching that scene for not only the direction, for the acting, and then, like, nobody cuts her off. She stops herself. And and the fact that she is so codependent at that point that she can lose it on him like that, it's so uncomfortable for me.
Yes.
Like, literally, all he said, you're here she's like, you saved my life. And he's like, no, you're here because of me. Like, yes, all of this danger that's been happening to you is because you've been involved with him. And then to freak out that he might want you to leave or that he might leave is just so this like codependent awfulness that like my skin crawls.
And that's where I feel like you need to bring in more vampire lore and more of the stupid stuff to be like,
right,
well, this is an effect that he can't control. Like, you're actually like chemically crazy right now.
Right.
Because that would make it less unpleasant. That would make it less like, ooh, I don't like it when we tell these love stories to young girls or young people in general. Because if it was like, you can't help this and this is not good, we need time apart so that you can like detox and know if you actually like me kind of thing.
Well, she says like, you can't leave me after he's like, we're leaving each other. And then she freaks out and then he's like, okay, fine. So you're like, what? Why? That's all you need to do is like throw a temper tantrum and then the guy won't leave you. Cool.
Yeah.
Noted.
Yeah.
And I mean, that brings us also like the ending. It's the same. It's like, okay, they dance and they're like, oh, I like you. Oh, I like you too.
Yeah. Well, it's okay, kind of cute with bye. The like, is he going to change her? The kiss on the neck. That's kind of cute. Is it going to happen? I don't know. Like at this point watching the movie, I didn't know about any of the books. I didn't know what was going to happen. So you're kind of like, oh, tender moment on the neck. Vampire, classic fang to the neck.
That is very sweet. But where I'm like, I needed that moment way earlier in the movie to be like, oh yeah, no, they have some sort of actual relationship to each other.
Yeah, and that's showing, it's showing his control. It's yeah, I agree. That would have been nice earlier. And then Victoria coming down the stairs is kind of a weak subplot because I remember thinking, oh, wait. Oh, yeah, I forgot about this person. Like the revenge of Victoria. Why is she at prom? You know, and they make her put her hair down so that you connect it. Oh, that's the same person. And I guess that was my boyfriend because we put our arms around each other, James, the nomad, and he's dead now.
Oh,
so here comes this weak revenge.
I didn't even catch any of that. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's
and
a
it's,
stretch.
It's just like, I mean, even if you hadn't read the books, you know that there's more books at this point.
You know, yeah.
Like, they obviously want to make a sequel, but it's like, did you really need the dun 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 dot 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 at the end of this movie? Did you really, like, could you have foreshadowed that any other way? Because it would be kind of nice if this had ended like She's All That style. You know, they're just dancing and he kisses her and it's like, we know that this can't last the way things are now, mm-hmm. but we know there's another movie coming, where it's like, did you put that sort mm-hmm. of that cliffhanger in just to convince executives to give you a second movie?
Yeah. Well, and does she look right in the camera as she goes down the stairs?
Yeah, there's almost a couple scenes where they looked straight in the camera. Renee, the mom, does it at one point too, and I was like, she just looked into the camera.
Which would be a really interesting device, actually, to have, like, the vampires are self-aware.
That they're in a movie? It becomes, like, uh-huh. fully Ferris Bueller, but with vampires.
They're, like, winking at the end of a scene.
We fixed it. Yeah. All right, so on Rotten Tomatoes, this has a 49% fresh rating from critics, uh-huh. 77% fresh from audiences, which I think is another one of those really big gaps that we don't see that often, but makes perfect sense for this movie. It has a 5.2 on IMDb. What would you give this out of 10? I'm going to ask Laura first.
I mean, you really have to go off of, like, what am I grading this on? You know what I mean? It's an emotional 10. It's a somatic 4.
Oh, my God.
So cinematic as in, like, both the visual and the narrative? Like, as a movie experience?
As a movie?
As a... Man, I remember my dad watched this movie unbeknownst to me to see what the hype was about, because we're really big on movies in our family, and like I grew up on classic films and classic westerns, and my dad knew I was really into this movie and he watched it, and I remember being like, no, 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 don't watch this movie, Dad. I'm like so embarrassed that you would watch this movie, which makes me feel like it must be at least a 5. It's hard to take my emotions out of it, though, or how I just feel about this movie in general. I always want to watch this movie. It will always make me feel the same way. So it's hard to separate. And there are, like, some cool bits. So it has to be a cinematic 5, an emotional 10.
So it's 10. Like it gets 10 Lauras out of 10.
Exactly.
But 5
modeling buttons.
Five fangs out of 10.
Oh, wait. Is that with
venom.
Fangs
with venom and pears. So I guess it's a 10 out of 10 with venom.
Okay. Five loud baseballs out of 10. AJ, what do you give it?
Oh, God. This is like one of the first movies we've watched on this podcast where, like, the so bad it's good quality has kind of come into play for me. Like,
it swings around the swing set a little bit.
Yeah.
And also, this is not, it's not just like for what it is, but where I come back to, like, the bad made for TV movie.
Yes.
Because for that, kind of like with Love Guaranteed, like for what it would have been if it had been that, I'd have been like, this is hilarious. This is a drinking game. This is like,
yeah,
the effects are so bad, blah, like all of these things. But here I'm like, but that isn't actually what you were going for.
Right. Yeah. Which is what makes it so good. It's like The Room. If they tried to make it bad, it wouldn't have been good.
But it's not bad enough to be The Room.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, I give it a solid, like, out of so bad it's good, I give it like eight pairs of vampire fangs. Out of just like my rating of this movie, it's like a 2.
Oh.
Like, I loathe almost everything about this movie. with like her exception of like her dad and Anna Kendrick.
Yeah, I give it like a 3.
For what category, Julia?
Everything.
Across the board, 3.
Because that's the thing. I think this is not bad enough to be good as a watching experience. This is bad enough to be like a drinking game where everyone in the room is just cringing. And that's a very specific category. And there are better movies to be so bad they're good to have fun with. Because here there's too much where you're just like cringing or rolling your eyes. So yeah, no, it's I it's not like, oh, I can't find anything redeeming about this movie. I'm just like,
Yeah.
If you have no emotional connection to it, it's just bad.
Yeah. I also with this movie and with, because I read I read the book fairly early on after it coming out. And I have that weird, like, indie kid disease where I'm like, if something is too hyped, I don't want to watch it.
Uh-huh.
So I, like, stayed away from this for a while. And I think that also meant that I was already too sort of hyped up negative about it, sort of where I was just like, I know too much about this movie and I know that it's not good, which maybe is unfair, but I mean, it lived down to that.
I went into it with such a clean slate.
And the books are just I only read the first one because I could not. And again, I've read some crap, and this was just too poorly written. So it just turned me off it.
And it's long. It's so long. It's like
the books are huge.
Les Mis, Anna Karenina length.
There are so many like crappy vampire series I would much rather read. I can put a list of them like on our Twitter or something. So clearly, even Laura agrees that this movie might need fixing. Question is if we can. Because mine was just like, my notes are just like a script doctor. And I don't even mean that in a mean way. Because like the dialogue is just not like filmic. It's not narrative. And writing, it's just corny. Like you see, you're just like, but it's so wooden spoken out loud. And like, I mean, you can kind of tell that the actors are not necessarily like super passionate about it. But it's just like someone to make them talk like people. Because I like, you know, all the fixes are either just like me being super sarcastic and ironic, or it's just like not make it. But like for fixing, just like to have them talk to each other so that you care about them as people and their feelings, you know, where you're just like, all right, now this is a cheesy and kind of earnest teen vampire movie.
Yeah.
So how would you fix this movie, Laura? Or is it you're just like sacrilege?
Yeah, I wouldn't. I thought about it and thought about it and thought about it. And I said, nope, it's perfect. I mean, I mentioned kind of parts that kind of annoy me. And then the one thing that I would add is after she figures out he's a vampire and then he's like, I've killed people. She's like, I don't care. I can't stay away from you. And then he has her kind of pinned up against that rock. There's not like a handshake. There's not like a kiss. There's not like a, okay, we're in it together now. They just launch into this like, we're fully committed.
Yeah.
And only like two or three scenes later do they actually kiss for the first time. It's very strange how that they're just like, okay, this is a thing now, starting now. I wish that they had like a high five to seal the deal. But other than that, I think it's perfect. It's just so perfect. And I have to add this for somewhere so you can edit this wherever. My bachelorette party was a theme within a theme because my friends know and love me so well. Started off at this classic Palm Springs bachelorette party. Then I was sent outside for a good hour to sit by the pool, like with a glass of wine. I come back in. They had flipped the house into a full Twilight themed bachelorette party in which we had a drinking game and my friends made everyone watch Twilight, the original. I had all my favorite snacks and it was just to the nth degree, like only the way that people in their 30s can do an awesome Twilight bachelorette party. It wasn't corny at all. It was the best. And we turned it into a drinking game and there's too much to drink about, you know? What do you pick when Bella has her mouth open, when Bella gasps, when
yes.
Edward looks scary, when Edward looks creepy, when Alice is annoying, like there were too many things, when Bella falls down.
It's so funny that you said snacks because it reminded me that they're eating red vines in the van when they're at the beach. And it's like, that is the only warm-toned thing in the movie until the last 10 minutes. Like, you should have had them eat anything else because that makes them suddenly, like, they're suddenly meaningful because they stick out, like, the dress in Schindler's List or something.
It's totally. Something. Like, yeah, anyway. Were they trying to be deep with this red symbolism of foreshadowing of vampire? No. The fun fact on that, I've watched all the special features, of course, is that those were the red vines that they had at craft services, and the unprofessional actors that they were bringing those onto the set, and then they're like, we're rolling, and they're like, well, I'm eating this, and I need a prop because I'm not confident in my acting skills, so here I am eating something, which is the easiest thing to do when you don't know what to do with your hands and you don't know how to make a scene interesting. Oh, I put licorice in my hands and I'm eating them. We definitely had licorice at my bachelorette party too.
Oh my God, I love that. I love that trivia because it makes so much sense.
It does make so much sense. In the van when they're bodyboarding, why? They're throwing it at Bella. It's a prop.
And Laura, just to go back to your bachelorette party.
Yes.
You and one of your closest friends, I believe, have also done Edward and Bella for Halloween.
Oh, yeah. That was not so long ago. one of my other friends who also, one of my friends who also enjoys the films as much as I do. There's a niche of us who got it at the right time in our 20s and 30s. And now we're in our 30s and 40s. And it's just not going away for us. Like, it just, something was like, the doors were open. We were welcoming this movie at a time. And now it will forever be this movie with the same feelings. Like, I watch it to almost the way that I look at pictures. You know, you want to go to those feelings again. So yes, very recently, maybe 3 years ago, 4 years ago, my best friend and I dressed up as Bella and Edward for Halloween. So it was funny because I was Bella and she was Edward, and she did a very great job. We got wigs. Like, we made funny shirts.
Just like him.
She had it down. She had the look down, the brooding. And we thought we were the funniest people in the world. I was living in Aspen at the time. So we're with people that are like dressed to the nines, you know, doing the mean girls, like sexy girl stuff. And we are Bella and Edward like 10 years too late, which made it funny. It wasn't like we did it right when the movie came out. We made t-shirts that said, mine said blinking, gasping, bad acting, because I was Bella. And hers said chivalry, brooding, shovel face, because Edward has donned the nickname of shovel face throughout this time. And I highly recommend watching the Twilight bad lip readings as well, because those
are... Oh, yeah, they're really good.
Phenomenal. So yeah, I take it too far, but in a fun way, but it's also serious, so I don't care.
I appreciate that though.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that you're also like, it's okay if you talk about the things that are bad, because I know.
I know.
Sometimes it's like, how do I, you know, how can you have an actual discussion? Maybe it's, you yeah. know, the academics damage that you're like, anything can be dissected. I have no, because some people can be really hurt when you talk about things that they love.
Yeah, I have other movies that I would defend. And this one, no, I'm right there with you.
Angie, how would you fix this?
I have a real easy fix. When they get to prom, they walk in, Usher's DJing, and he's like, hey, everyone, let's do that dance I taught you. And we have a full choreographed dance to end the movie.
In the extended Freddie Prinze Jr. universe.
Cinematic universe.
That
yes.
would be awesome. Yeah. Could they do Thriller? Is that
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought they would do it to. Yeah. Yeah. But that would be
scary,
like that
skeletons
would
skeletons and shivers down your spine.
Yeah, Thriller would be like so on the nose for this movie that it would be like, of course they would do Thriller. Like, it just fits in with how
Bar Mitzvah?
That would be that's for the sequel when Jacob becomes Absolutely. The love interest. But yeah, that's my fix. Just bring Usher in as a DJ and they do a choreographed dance to Thriller.
I like it. All right. I mean, that kind of could also be your weird, because we joked that should we maybe in October try to make the movies normal? But because I was thinking about it, it's like, so what, you take out the vampires and then it's just really bad. And
then it's just a really toxic relationship.
Yeah. But then I was like, no, because we're good at making it weird. And also, I know that you like Batman crossovers. Because Robert Pattinson is Batman.
That's why I make it weird too.
Because vampires turn into bats.
Right. And he's playing Batman. But I was like, if we do take out the vampires, could he be FBI? Could the family be like an undercover family and that's why they move around?
Yeah.
Or could he be Hydra? Like, he's human, but he's super trained and possibly a little serum enhanced so that he's, or, you know, he's like Captain America universe FBI. But mm-hmm. enhanced, so like he still can do the weird saving and stuff, but he has to, you know, keep his cover and not be outed. But he's also like, because that would also make it like kind of more explicitly creepy, because he would have to be like at least, you know, 25 or 28 to be an FBI agent.
Yeah.
But he's playing 17. So it's like never been kissed, but the other way around.
21 Jump Street a little bit.
Yeah. So that's my weird. So I stole it. Your Batman.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I thought like, yeah, Robert Pattinson. And the teaser for the new Batman movie came out and it looks really awesome and intense and gritty and harsh. And I think Robert Pattinson is actually a very good actor in a lot of things. And so, yeah, my idea is, he is literally a Batman because vampires can turn into bats. I know probably not in this cinema, in this world, but either that or my make it weird was every vampire is full on Bela Lugosi vampire style, like capes and Widow's Peaks. Ooh. And everyone's like, who's the new guy? And it's just like a 50-year-old guy with like a big old cape. He's like, yes.
So kind of like Dracula Dead and Loving It.
Yeah.
But meat's never been kissed.
Yeah, but everyone's just like swooning over these like old vampires.
I love it. What about you, Laura? How would you make this weird?
So fun connection to what you're talking about with Batman is Robert Pattinson, Edward Cullen becomes Edward Cullen vampire during the Spanish influenza. And now Edward Cullen is becoming Batman during COVID-19.
Oh.
So we're bringing it all around to the beginning of the episode.
This is like very cyclical.
So I had a really hard time making it weird. I think the best thing, Julia, that you said is to make it normal. That's really hilarious. But all I got was this. Okay, the Cullens, they don't eat animals. They eat trash and single-use plastic. So they're do-gooders for the environment.
They're were-raccoons?
Yes, exactly. And Bella is extremely wasteful. And so Edward stalks her because he's really just stalking the trash that she produces. And instead of sparkling, the vampires just giggle hysterically when they're in the...
That is the best thing I have ever heard.
That is so weird. I love it.
I feel I need to talk to my publisher friends and be like, hi, I have a thing that I have stolen from someone in America. Just like supernatural romance where everyone, instead of powers, just has really, really weird tics. Which is like, under the full moon, you're just like, oh no, everything is rhyming. Why is everything I'm saying rhyming?
Yeah, not like bathroom humor. I didn't want them to fart every time. I was like, you just giggle hysterically. Or, yeah, go into some sort of, you sing for the rest of the scene.
Oh my gosh, that's so good.
I love it. I love it. I don't know how we can top that. So I think
it's weirder. But making it normal amazing. Would be the weirdest.
That is amazing. Listener, we would love to hear your thoughts about Twilight because yes. I know this is a movie that people have a lot of feelings about. If you want us to keep talking about weird stuff in these movies on Patreon, let us know. The Patreon is at patreon.com/chickflickfix. Show notes, and I don't know if we're going to be able to show Halloween pictures, but everything can be found at theincomparable.com/chickflickfix. We're chickflickfix on Twitter and Instagram. Do you want the people to follow you anywhere, Laura?
Yeah, I have a fun food account, eating.crow, on Instagram. If you like plain food, follow
good
me.
Good name.
Plain food. Although you have a very good relationship with DiGiorno on that.
DiGiorno comments on my Instagram. I'm waiting for them to sponsor me.
That is very cool. We'll be back next week. Thank you so much for joining us. Say goodbye, AJ.
Goodbye, AJ.
Say goodbye, Laura.
Goodbye, Laura. Thanks for having me.